Well, it looks like we got a great crowd here. I liked hearing all the chatter before, just like being in a real AA meeting. My name is Jerry, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
I am physically located in Las Vegas, Nevada at the moment. And this beautiful backdrop, I just have to tell you, is 30 minutes outside of Las Vegas, Valley of Fire. So put that up there in honor of our desert theme today. I'm a secretary on the board of the International Conference of Secular AA. Have been doing that job for a few years. Looking forward to transitioning to something new come October when we have our next conference. And Joe will talk about that in a few minutes. After Joe talks, we'll have John will come on and he'll host the rest of our meeting here today. So, Joe, is it your turn?
Sure. I just want to bring to people's attention a couple of things coming up in terms of secular AA that are going on. And I will post this information in the chat. And I welcome anybody else who has events coming up to post them in the chat as well. First, June 19th, the International Conference of Secular AA Europe is all virtual, so the whole world is welcome to attend. It's 12 hours from 11 a.m. UK and Ireland time to 11 p.m. And that would be starting at 4 in the morning if you're in the East and ending at 4 in the afternoon, or 1 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon in the West. And it's time to get sober somewhere in the world for those 12 hours. We'll post the program. We'll post a poster and feel free to share that. Also, because COVID will not be forever, we are going ahead with plans with the International Conference of Secular AA in Washington. Our hotel is in Bethesda, Maryland. I believe it's the Hyatt, and they are taking reservations now. And we will very soon, we will have our registration open at aasecular.org, and you can register. And we'll be looking for meeting ideas, people who are coming if they have an idea for a meeting. We're not going to sort of dictate the whole content of the schedule. Of course, this will be something where we will be following the medical advice and science. The hotel has been told they should be open. We won't be cramming 600 people into a 600-person room, but whatever the protocols are at the time, we'll be following them. And there will be some virtual content available as well for people who can't join us in Washington. That will be October 29th to 31st. So a great way to end the pandemic, get together in Washington. Like I mentioned, I will post this in the chat. If you have other events, please feel free to post them. Back to you, Jerry. Thanks, everybody.
All right, Joe. Thanks very much. And again, I want to welcome, we've had a couple people join us. I've got 42. That's so fabulous. So welcome, everyone. And I'm going to turn it over. Our primary group this month is, Joe told me we have a desert theme. So it's not sure. It's Cottonwood. Is that correct? Arizona. And John R. from Valley. Verde Valley is gonna be our host. Go ahead, John.
Thanks, Jerry. Yeah, we're the Free Thinkers Living Sober group of the Verde Valley, which is what's behind me, the Verde Valley. We're actually up in the mountains, so we're upper desert, I guess. And thank you very much. I appreciate it. I just want to talk a little bit about how the Free Thinkers group started back in 2014. A couple of guys came up to me and they'd heard me say that I didn't believe in God and I've been sober a long time, and they wanted to know if I'd help them start a group for atheists, agnostics, and free thinkers. And I said, sure, why not? I didn't know if anybody would ever come, This guy named Kurt C., who had over 30 years at the time, and another guy named Jim H., who was, I think he was about a year or two sober, but in his 80s. And my wife, Kat, who's here, we decided to have an organizational meeting, and we had 13 people show up for the organizational meeting. Now, keep in mind, Cottonwood is a pretty small town, so we were actually pretty thrilled that so many people showed up, and we started our very first meeting. I believe it was November of 2014 was our first meeting. We were looking back in the records, and evidently we didn't keep those records for that. We kept our first business meeting, which was in December, so we'd already been going, and we had actually a lot of people show up for that first meeting, and then we ended up having people wanting to have more than one, so we expanded it, and those were, of course, face-to-face. Now it's a international meeting because we're on Zoom, and we have people from Ireland and UK and Canada and that consider themselves members of our group. So I guess we're going to stay on Zoom for the duration, for more than the duration, for however long I can hold out, I guess. We decided on the name Free Thinkers Living Sober for two reasons. One was because of the Living Sober book, which we think is one of the best things that Alcoholics Anonymous ever produced. And the other was because we wanted to make sure it was inclusive and not sounding exclusive. So we decided Free Thinkers was the best way to do that. In fact, our format even says we want to maintain a tradition of free expression and conduct a meeting where alcoholics may feel free to express themselves about their own experiences, beliefs, or feelings, including any doubts or disbeliefs they may have. But as free thinkers, we aspire to open-mindedness and appreciating the sharing of others, even those with whom we disagree, maybe especially those with whom we disagree. And we only ask that people share without trying to dissuade or argue or disrespect anyone else. So we have people in our group and have had people in our group who are quote-unquote believers, whatever that might mean. In fact, one of our longest old-timers who's passed away now, a woman named Louise, was a member of that group for quite some time before she passed. And she was 54 years sober, I think, when she passed a few years ago. One of our members suggested we should call it the palliative group because we had several older members that are no longer with us. Jim, who was one of the original members who helped start this whole thing, has passed. And a guy by the name of Stan and another guy named Daryl, who is also a fairly well-known atheist around these parts. So it's been, we're coming up on 7 years now as a meeting. And one of the things we didn't have to do at all when we started was worry about whether or not Intergroup would list us, because several of us were on the committee of the Intergroup. So we did have one guy kind of object, but he was pretty quick to realize that we go by the traditions, not by the politics of the Intergroup. Anyway, it's been a wonderful 7 years. We've got, I guess we have somewhere around 30 members from the local area, some of whom don't do Zoom, unfortunately. And total, I think we have a membership of about 50 people, including all of our international and national members. So it's pretty great. And I asked one of the speakers, I asked her because she found us after just a short period of time of sobriety, and she's been with us ever since, and she's a very important member of our group, and she also is the lead for our Tuesday evening meeting, Tuesday 5:30 our time, So right now that's the same as Pacific time. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Suzanne P.
Thank you, John. Hi, everybody. My name's Suzanne, and I am an alcoholic. Hi. It's my home group is Freethinkers Living Sober out of Cottonwood, Arizona, and my sobriety date is August 31st, 2017. And it's really an honor and pleasure to speak to you all here today, to be asked to talk to you. As a brief history of me, I got to AA about a week shy of my 48th birthday. Actually, it was exactly a week shy of my 48th birthday. So I came to AA sort of late in life, and I knew nothing about it, nothing. I have a sibling in the program for almost 30 years now, but she didn't really talk to me about it. I just knew she went to these meetings, and I knew she was religious and went to church every week. And I thought, honestly, I thought AA was a religious program, and I never considered going until that day, because I had woken up from a blackout in my car. And I really didn't think I'd be waking up that morning. And I did, in the driveway of where I was staying. I live in Arizona currently, but I'm from the East, and I had been staying on a farm that belongs to my brother, and he doesn't live there. So I was alone, and I was a daily drinker. I had a lot of yets. I still have a lot of yets on the table. I worked from home for an IT company, so nobody knew. I could cover up my webcam. And by the time I got to AA, it was either, leave this world or do something different. So that's why I was willing to go to AA, even though I thought it was religious, and I was not religious. But I wasn't sure what to expect. And, I got there for so many reasons. I had lost the closest people in my life in quick succession. They died. One of them was my former husband of 17 years who killed himself. And he was also an alcoholic. And I was either going to go down that same path or I was going to get sober. So I was lucky that I think I was lucky to be in New York State. My first, they were very open-minded there. My first meeting was in a barn. And by the third meeting, I decided I would try to get sober. And I had a woman that helped me, and she followed me home, poured out all my booze, and I started asking her about the God thing and told her, that was the last thing I wanted to hear about. And she said, Suzanne, all you have to do is take it one day at a time, not drink, make your bed, take a shower, and breathe. And she put her hands on my shoulders and she said, breathe. And I still struggle with the breathing part, especially when I'm nervous. So like now, but I came back to Arizona the day I took my 30-day trip. And when I got to Arizona, I started going to meetings, and I quickly found out that Arizona meetings in my locality seemed to be quite different than what I had experienced in my first 30 days. Now, in my first 30 days, perhaps I didn't hear a lot of what was being said, and I was, we all know what it's like in our first 30 days getting sober. It's tough. And a lot of things that we hear in meetings, or at least for me, I didn't really hear them, but I started to, and I started to sort of meeting hop, and try to find a meeting where I felt comfortable. I finally did. It was called the Red Road Group, and they were very open to different kinds of spirituality. And I am agnostic in the textbook definition of the word. I believe that it is impossible to know if there is a God. And I believe it's impossible to know if there's an afterlife and if there's gods or goddesses or deities and so forth. My belief system as an agnostic is I'm an agnostic that prays. I pray to the universe. I put that out there a lot because I know it's kind of different. But I do. I believe in the energy of prayer, more like an affirmation. And I found this group that was very much leaning towards the American Indian way, and they were open to that. I felt comfortable there, but after about a year, that group started to dissolve. And that home group now is gone. It's dissipated. And I went to a new one. My now current husband, who's also a recovering alcoholic, I went to his home group. And I tried really, really hard to feel comfortable there. But I did not. And a lot of people say, I always feel better when I leave a meeting. And I started to realize that every time I went to a lot of meetings, I went to between 9 and 12 meetings a week. And I went to that particular group sometimes twice a day. And I was starting to find that when I left those meetings, I felt worse. And I started to get even more, I'm a quiet person, but I started to get even more quiet and introverted, to the point where I had one of the members come up to me after a meeting, and I'll never forget it. And he said, "You must have something really eating you up inside that you haven't worked with your sponsor because you never speak." And I was so upset because I work with my sponsor all the time. And the thing is, I couldn't share because I couldn't get past the topics. The topics were always the same. The shares were always the same. They weren't from what I considered from the members' hearts. And some members in AA need that repetition and that quotes of the big book and the expressions that we use and the jargon that we use in AA. But I tired of it very quickly. And the best thing that's happened to me in sobriety is that I was lucky that about a year in, I found Free Thinkers Living Sober, and it changed my life. And I really believe it saved my life. My husband found it first and went to the meeting. And when he came home, he was ecstatic. And he said, "You won't believe this. You know, you just won't believe what this is like." And I didn't. And I started reading the Beyond Belief book actually before we knew that there were free thinkers in our locality. We didn't even know. And I really loved the book. And my husband said, "They read the Beyond Belief book." And I'm like, "You're kidding. You know, they read a non-approved book. Like, what is that? I've never heard of that before." And I just thought, well, I have to see this for myself. So I went, and it quickly became my new home group, which it remains today. What I've learned in Free Thinkers is it's really changed me. I share it almost every meeting, and the topics are always so different and so deep and so interesting to me, and they help me stay sober because I'm hearing things that help me learn to grow and to move on with my life. And I don't feel judged for being agnostic. I remember the first time I tried to say I was agnostic in the traditional meetings that I was going to. It was a noon meeting, so there were very few people there, and I thought maybe it was safe. My sponsor was in the room, and I thought maybe, okay. And the topic was God, and I had nothing to say. And so when it got to be my turn to share, I said, "Well, I actually do believe in powers, plural, greater than myself, but I do not choose to call them God." And the people in the room all went, and I shrunk, you know, in my chair. And I said, "Well, you know, I'm agnostic." And it felt like I came out of a closet, but I also felt like I was going to be strung up when I left the room. And I don't have to feel that way in Free Thinkers. I can say I'm an agnostic of praise. I can say that my higher powers are many, you know, the universe, energy, my inner self, my higher self that I'm trying to find while I'm still trying to find who I am, because I'm still so early in. But through secular AA, I hear shares that are regular vocabulary that come from people's hearts. I don't hear parroting. I hear authenticity, and that's what I want to find. To thine own self be true. I want to find my authentic self. And the fellowship is amazing. Whether someone is an atheist, an agnostic, a Buddhist, a pagan, whatever they are, it just doesn't matter. And our topics take a life of their own. They just go off on these amazing journeys in that hour meeting. And I always, always, always leave a Free Thinkers Living Sober meeting feeling better. Through Zoom, I've been able to, actually, I came out of my shell a little bit. I wanted to mention that I have really come out of my shell because of Free Thinkers. And because of Zoom, I cannot believe the amount of secular AAers that I've been able to meet and become friends with and enjoy in the fellowship. And the fellowship was the first thing that made me stay in AA because people were kind in New York State. And in Free Thinkers, I find that kindness and that non-judgment. I've been able to speak in Canada. I spoke in Ireland. So I like to say, oh, I went to Ireland the other day for an hour, you know. It's just amazing. I go to other secular meetings in other countries, and how cool is that? And I have a friend in England who was able to come and support me through Zoom, and it's just been such a journey. And I am sponsored by a Christian, and it works. And I have sponsored women that are Christian, that are pagan, that are atheist, that are Buddhist, and that are Wiccan, and agnostic, like myself. And what I have found is that we can navigate the traditional AA steps. We've found a way to do it, and we keep a secular step book that I like to use, the practical steps, we keep that next to us. And whenever we get hung up on a traditional step, we go to that one and we read through that one instead. And we find a way to navigate the traditional steps. And it's awesome because I would have never been able, I wouldn't have even thought to do that before secular AA because I never heard secular steps before. I didn't know they existed. I didn't know that I could go to a meeting where I did not have to have the Our Father, the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting, which I really never wanted to say. So I would always put my head down and have all my hair in front of my face and, you know, try not to have anybody notice I wasn't speaking. And it was hard. It was really hard. And now we have our moment of silence and our responsibility declaration at the end, which really is important to me because service has been very important to me. And being able to have the honor of chairing the Tuesday night meeting is huge to me. It's huge. So I guess my message today is just gratefulness and hope for the future of my sobriety. And it's all because of secular AA. I really feel that if I hadn't been led to find Free Thinkers and secular AA, that I would have stopped going to meetings because I was to that point where I was angry. I didn't just feel worse when I left the meeting. I was angry and I was building up resentments like you wouldn't believe and calling my sponsor with 10 steps like every other minute. So I would have stop going to meetings. And if I had stopped going to meetings and having the fellowship and having service and really doing the work, I probably would be drunk right now. I would be out. I really believe that. I really believe that secular AA has saved my life by giving me choices. And it's also helped me be able to join a traditional meeting. I've spoken on two traditional meetings and I've enjoyed them. I won't go back to the one where I felt unsafe, the home group that I spoke of that I left. But I have gone to some on Zoom that are traditional, and I have not felt judged for, I no longer feel ashamed or embarrassed to say I am an agnostic. I feel free, like I've been set free to really truly find myself. So not only has secular AA opened up doors for me, for service and for the way that I sponsor and am sponsored by a woman with completely different belief system. I'm just very lucky to have her. But I've been able to find a way to go to traditional AA meetings and not have a resentment when I leave. So I'm very, 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 very grateful to Freethinkers Living Sober, to Joe C for writing Beyond Belief, for all the work that the people put into the secular conferences, and for the fellowship that I've found in my new home group, and everyone that I've met all around the world. It's just a wonderful thing, and it gives me hope, because when I got to AA, I had no hope, none. My future was not there. I saw a big black hole and a big black void. And now I see a future, and Freethinkers has helped me move forward through a very serious disease that I came down with in September. It's helped me believe in myself enough to reapply to university to finish my degree and move on to a new career that I never would have had the confidence to try to do had I not found secular AA. I wouldn't have. I would be stuck hearing the same things over and over and never realize that I can move on to a new life, even at my age, and start fresh. So thank you to all of you for letting me speak today. It's been a real honor, and I'm very grateful to be here. And with that, I will close. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Thanks.
Wonderful. Suzanne. Really appreciate it. I try not to cry when she shares, but I'm hopeless. And I'd like to introduce our next speaker, who's also been with Freethinkers Living Sober for quite some time now. And his name is Randy.
Hey, Randy.
Hello, everyone. My name is Randy. Randy Petty. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Randy.
Hi.
Hey, Randy.
Good job, Suzanne. I enjoyed your story, as always. As many times as we tell our stories, there always seems like there's a few new tidbits that I haven't heard before. I was born in Duke Hospital in Durham, North Carolina. Second child of four. I was the only boy, three sisters. My parents are a pretty good example of good girls marry bad boys. My dad was a World War II Navy veteran, and they got together not too long after the war. My dad was an alcoholic, but he never drank at home. My mother and my sisters never saw him drink. I'm sure that my mother knew that he drank. And looking back on it, that might have been even more crazy making to not understand what caused the mood swings and the different personalities. But I started working for him. He had his own business, a big upholstery shop. And I started working for him when I was like 11 or 12 years old. And I used to ask if I could go fishing with him on the weekends, and he wouldn't let me because that was his really blow it out drinking time. And I guess he didn't want to let me into that, but he finally had to. And so I got to see some of the most insane drinking behavior that I've ever seen in my life, ever. And I don't know if how much of it had to do with the naval experience or the all of those guys talked about coming back and making their mark. They all had to, I don't know, some material success to show who they were. But with my dad drinking, it wasn't sitting quietly socializing with somebody. It was driving 100 miles an hour and getting in fights. And that was the kind of shit I grew up with. And I worked for him until I was about 16, and we started locking horns. And I even called him an alcoholic to his face one time. I don't know where that word came from. I didn't know what it meant really. But I think I learned to be a clown early on. If I can make him laugh, the days would go better, especially those days when I started, he'd go in the shop bathroom and start drinking bourbon at 9 or 10 in the morning. And I grew up with a Southern Baptist church a half mile from our house that we went to every time the door was open. And we did lots and lots of the maintenance my family did to the church building and laying new tile and mowing the yards. And we were very prominent in the church, and I grew up pretty sheltered outside of my extended family. And that church congregation was all that I knew. We lived too far from school for me to play any sports. So I never knew anything about sports. I never knew anything about teamwork. And like I say, I was the only boy. My father was an only child. My mother had two sisters, no brothers. And then both of my grandfathers died when I was 12 when I was 13. And so I stopped going to those rural, to those farms, and they moved the grandmothers to town. So there were no males in my life, none. And as much as I hated my father's drinking, I got up. Actually, I had my first serious girlfriend was in high school, and she said, I can't go out with you if you're not a Christian. And I said, oh, wow, I'm like going to be the next Billy Graham. And so, you know, whatever you got to say. So I really seriously thought about being a Southern Baptist preacher. Well, I finally hit 18 and went off to college and got out from under my mother's overbearing thumb and made up for lost time. And as bad as I hated my father's drinking, I went down that road wide open. And been off at college a couple of months, and a guy stopped me in the hall. I didn't even know him. And he said, man, there's other ways to get high. You don't have to drink yourself to death. And I found out later that his father had died in my hometown in a bootleg joint, taking downers and drinking moonshine. And he was a heroin addict and had already pulled quite a bit of time. But he hated drinking because it had killed his father. So I went over to his room and smoked my first joint. And in a couple of weeks, I shot up heroin for the first time. So I can't explain that. It makes no logic, no sense. I think I just turned my back on everything. I think I almost hoped that I got caught so that my perfect family would be exposed as bullshit. And so I turned my back on the church and everything. I don't think I had seriously believed it for a long time. So I did the hard drugs for a couple of years, and it was just a 2-year junior college. And I actually got a diploma. And thought I had gotten my shit together because I had stopped that and I was only doing this. And I'd gone back to drinking heavy. And I tried working for my dad a couple more times, and that didn't work out. We just locked horns immediately, especially over his drinking. And a mutual friend from high school said, I know somebody that needs some help. This girl is running her father's tobacco farm while he runs a farm equipment dealership. So I went over there and moved in. And for a couple of $100 a week and the farmer's daughter, that was the end of my college career, and I married the daughter. And for 17 years, I pretty much stayed drunk, but I was a functional drunk. We had two great children. We ran a farm. I taught myself how to do body work, and I had a little shop on the farm. So in addition to not having any men kin to me, I also didn't have a boss man. So I answered to nobody, and the parties were at my house, and I could run you off if I didn't like you. And I weighed about 140 pounds at the time, and I had my own little terrorist alcoholic kingdom. And that might sound like a good place to be, but that was not what my ego needed. And I was so determined to not be an alcoholic like my father. And I left out something. Right after I got married, I was 21 and my father was 50. He got killed, a tractor turned over out on the farm. And instead of dying an alcoholic death, it let him die from what looked like just a tragic accident, but he was on the way out. So I wound up moving out to the farm with my wife, and we started having kids. And I was functional. I would, you know, I was so determined to not be a drinker like my father. All those World War II boys were bourbon drinkers, the ones that I knew. And I was in my 20s before I ever saw a human drink out of a glass or sitting at a table. It was Dixie cups and a bottle under a truck seat and don't tell your mama. And so it was always taboo. And so I said, you can't have a drinking problem if you just drink beer. So I drank a case of beer a day for 18 years. And believe it or not, that caused problems eventually. Financially, maritally, physically. I think it was about a year and a half between my first desire chip and the one that's held up for quite a while. And I've been sober since March the 9th of 1989. I just got 32 years in March. So in that year and a half, I went through all of the usual thought processes of I should quit for my wife and kids. And anyway, it didn't work. I got a few 30-day chips. I think I got a 90-day chip one time, and I went back and drank for 7 more months in a house out in the woods by myself. And every day was an epic battle whether I was going to drink or not. And most days I did. And that 7 months is what made a believer out of me. I've never had to question my personal relationship with alcohol. If it's in my bloodstream, it owns my soul, and it's making the decisions, and it made some damn poor decisions. So I lost quite a bit. I was bleeding from both ends. I had some serious health problems, and my marriage and finances and all were hanging by a thread. And I got sober, and I didn't even tell my wife I was sober. And the fact that I had gotten a 90-day chip once before, I had an attitude of, we'll see if I mean it. So I hit 91 days, and then it kept on. And I did a lot of things wrong. But the two things I did right was I didn't drink and I went to meetings. I didn't get a sponsor for quite a while. And the sponsor I did get, I don't know if I chose him because I thought I could handle him. But when I said something to him about, you know, I've been sober a couple of years and things still don't seem too good, and maybe I need to work the steps. And he said, oh, they're just suggestions. Don't worry about it. You're doing fine. So we sold that place in North Carolina and moved to the Ozarks of Arkansas when I was 5 years sober. And I got a new sponsor there in a couple of years after that, 7 years sober, which also happens to be the statute of limitations on most of the shit you did while you were drunk. So I did a fifth step with him, and I felt like I joined the human race that day, and I lost my uniqueness. And in the big book, I still think there's some pure poetry in the big book, as much of it as I don't agree with. But it said, never once had we tried to be one among coworkers or among family members. We had tried to climb on top of the heap or hide underneath it. So that felt like a big change in my life. That 7 years that I was sober and didn't do steps were the years, I think my children were 8 and 11 when I got sober. So that 7 years put them out of high school or almost. And I could have been a better father during that time. That's something else that hurts to look back on. Okay, we'll move up to about, I worked for somebody else. I worked for a body shop at a dealership out there for about 4 or 5 years, and then opened my own business again, which I had my own most of my life, and hired a bunch of guys and created a monster, a lot of overhead. And my wife stopped her public job and came over to be secretary bookkeeper. And around 2011, we'd been married 37 years. I was 22 years sober, and she had 23 years in Al-Anon. She decided she needed a divorce, And I didn't get any tears or explanation. I think the reason was that the kids were grown and gone, and here she is living with a boring ass sober man, and it was her turn to drink and smoke pot. So nobody ever promised us a rose garden. And it just makes me believe more the longer I'm sober that nobody, absolutely nobody, really gets alcoholics except other alcoholics. And, you know, you can live with somebody, you can be a sibling or a spouse or whatever. But three of our four parents died from alcoholism, so it seems strange that that looked like what she couldn't live without. But as far as I know, she has not gone down that road. We don't communicate. Both of us love our kids, and the kids love both of us. And I have a son in Flagstaff here close to where I am. So it took us about 3 years to sell the property in Arkansas. So I left there in December 2014, sold the property, and I had an old RV. And I wanted to go somewhere warm. And I wound up in Yuma, Arizona on Christmas Eve and didn't know anybody in the whole state except for my son in Flagstaff. And I was about as blue as I've ever been. And I looked online, found an AA meeting. 2 hours later, had 50 new friends and an invitation to Christmas dinner the next day, and stayed down there for 4 or 5 months. And I said I left Arkansas December 2014. If you'll remember, John said that they started the meeting in November 2014. So after 5 or 6 months in Yuma, I actually got exposed down there to somebody that was calling a meeting. He had a freethinker meeting. Didn't have any readings, and all we had in common was not falling for religion. But when it started getting hot in Yuma, I moved up north. I thought I might live around Flag where my son was. I found out how expensive that was. I looked online and I found this little town called Cottonwood, about 50 miles south. And it said, I looked up AA and they had a freethinker meeting. And then I found out they had three a week. So that would have been about June of 2015. And I've been a proud member of Freethinkers since I walked in the door. Before I forget to say it, lots of people have played a part in this, but John and John and Kat have made such a contribution to starting the meeting in the first place and running the meeting for years and really, really, really stepping up with the Zoom part and making us just, by God, internationally famous. It's just unbelievable. But, okay, with the little time I got left, and tell me if I have any time left. What do you think, John?
Sure, whenever you're done.
Okay. So that got me sober, and that got me to Cottonwood, and that got me to find the Freethinkers meeting. I'd like to share a bit on my opinion of secular AA and how much it means and where it's going, where I think it's going, and how incredibly important it is. I lived in the Ozarks of Arkansas, in a town the same size as Cottonwood, 12,000 people. There are 226 churches. Dry, don't sell booze. We didn't have any AA meetings in the churches because they didn't believe in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you had Jesus, that was all you needed. And the longer I was there, my last 4 or 5 years there, just it got more objectionable to me all the time. The Our Father prayers and I shared a bit about how I don't know that I said atheist or agnostic, but I said I didn't believe in organized religion. And I don't know. I read the demographics. I know that since the year 2000, the United States is almost 20% more secular than we were as far as people that don't identify as regular churchgoers or denomination affiliated. At the same time, I keep reading how young people are consuming more alcohol than ever. So that sounds like a little collision ahead somewhere. There's a lot of things that I don't have faith in, but I have great faith in alcohol continuing to do what it has always done in some people's lives. I think the statistics are roughly 7% of the population. I think 70% of Americans drink, and 10% of those drink alcoholically. So that's 7 out of 100. We're not on every street corner, but we're not rare. I don't know what percentage of us admit that we're alcoholic or do anything about it besides die early and make everybody else miserable. But I think this Zoom meeting, if I'm not mistaken, last week Joe shared in a meeting that GSO says we added 61,000 people during Zoom year, something like that. And I got sober in 89. I think AA's been losing membership since 1990, since right after I came in. I don't think that had anything to do with me, but after decades of gaining membership, I think I started losing. So, and I can't believe I don't see very many here today. I guess youth is a subjective thing. I don't know what youth is, younger than me. I don't see a whole lot of young people here today, but we get a lot of young members, young visitors to the Freethinkers group. And we get a lot of brand new people, and a lot of people of all ages that come in and say, the God talk ran me out of AA, and this is such a breath of fresh air. And I am so proud to be a part of it. And AA never promised any of us a rose garden. That marriage of mine ending was a big deal. And I'm not saying that it's over in my mind. The marriage certainly is, but my grieving process, because it comes and goes. But it never crossed my mind when that happened to take a drink. I never left AA. I never went to less than 2 or 3 meetings a week on average. But I jumped in with both feet again and went to 2 or 3 meetings, including Al-Anon, when that happened. And AA saved my life again. And when I left in that RV and left Arkansas, I was thinking, I'm 25 years sober, and I think I'm going to have to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. I cannot take the religiosity. And I didn't know if I could stay sober without AA, but then magically God provided Freethinkers meeting. So I'm on fire for AA again. I still think, I don't think I'm sober by the grace of a loving God. I think I'm sober because I drank myself into a corner, and some kind strangers that had been there before and knew the name of the game shared with me from their heart what it used to be like, what happened, what it's like now. And I'll say one more thing and I'll hush up. I published a little book, this is not a plug for it, but the little book of haiku that my therapist thought would be therapeutic for me. I had already written it when he heard about it, but the title of it is A Raw Blue-Collar Life in Haiku. And I describe it as a way to get a lot of ground glass out of inside of me on a lot of different subjects. And there's like 15 different subjects. A big one is religion. A big one is relationships. But here's what I decided to write on the back of the book. Randy is determined to question everything he was told when young about his race, the South, his country, sex, alcohol, religion, and politics. He aspires to be willing to discard anything that doesn't hold up to education, examination, logic, and that inner concept of what is right and fair. To the best of his knowledge, he has no unexamined beliefs. Well, that's who I aspire to be. The reality is not quite as amazing as the writing, but I guess it's probably easier to say this when you're old and you've lost your parents a long time ago, but it's all those circles that my mind had to go through between being raised in a Southern Baptist church and to say I'm atheist. You know, what will my parents think? What will grandma think? It's not about anybody else. They did the best they could. They believed what they did, but I'm not going to live my life afraid to question anything and to draw my own conclusions. And that's been incredibly freeing. And I owe an awful lot of that to finding this Freethinker meeting And I've been accused of being authentic by several people out here on the road where I live. And that is definitely what I aspire to. I really don't need a whole lot of somebody else's approval or to fit into their mold of who or what they think I am. I'm a guy that is 68 years old and is in better shape physically than he was at 35. He was at death's door. And if I don't live to see the sun go down today, I've had 32 years I didn't have coming to me because I stopped drinking. And I stopped drinking because I found Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for listening.
All right. Thanks, Randy.
Thank you, Randy.
So, Joe, thanks, Randy. do we open it up or do we no souls saved after one or?
Keep her going. Just invite people to do the show of hands thing.
Okay. If you want to raise your hand and say anything, feel free to do that. And I'll call on people in the order that the hands show up, if we have any.
I'm Kat Little Creek. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kat.
And I don't usually share a lot, but I just want to say these two people who shared for our group today are two of my most favorite people on the planet. And I just want you guys to know I am just so proud of you. And thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Kat.
Thanks, Kat. I wish she'd share. I always wish she'd share because I love when she does. Janice?
I'm Janice. I'm an alcoholic from New Mexico. Those are really, really great shares. You know, I didn't find secular A till the pandemic, and I got given a meeting, and then from there it just went on, and I finally found a spreadsheet, and so I've been all over the world, and I've spoken more in this last year, plus, I guess now, than I'd done in the past, the 15 years before. Because I identify, you know, I was an atheist when I walked in the door. And I got sober in Southern Baptist country in Texas, in San Antonio. But they just told me all I had to do was be willing to believe in something bigger than myself. And I had an agnostic second sponsor, so I kind of slid through two and three. And I knew when I came in the door, I wasn't running the world, and that was a good thing. And I really think it's all you need to do. Because you have to be able to look yourself in the mirror. And if you're going to do the steps or whatever, for me, the steps were important, particularly the inventory. But I wouldn't have been able to do that if I still thought I was running the world. I think you have to be able to get honest with yourself. And I've met a whole bunch of new, wonderful people in Secular AA. And I've decided that there's a lot, you know, there's a lot more ways to participate in AA and to stay sober in AA than what traditional AA will tell you. And I have gotten myself, well, I pretty much kicked myself out of a meeting that I got. I said secular AA and they just got furious at me. There can't be anything like that. And it's like, oh, well. So now that we're going back to meetings, I'm not exactly sure where I'm going. I have to, you know, I mean, I'm going back to some of the ones I went to and thinking if the dynamics in the room were different on Zoom than on Zoom, because some of these meetings were better in person. But if not, I still, you know, I have what will be around on Zoom, and I'll have a couple of meetings here that I can go to. And I'm going to get together with this woman in Santa Fe and see if we can't either combine me with her meeting, which is small, or start another one so we can get people from all over the state. And it'll probably be on Zoom to begin with, because that's just the, you know, you don't have the cost you have when you have to have a meeting room and pay rent and all that. But I really like the shares, and I like the bit about, and you know, hanging your head with the Lord's Prayer. Well, I finally got to the point after about 6 years where I said, I'm not saying this anymore because I don't believe it. So I will stand there and then I'll say certain things under my breath, prayers I can do, like the Serenity Prayer, you know, the responsibility statement, Rule 62, stuff like that to get through it. Whether I'm going to be able to keep on doing that, I don't know either, but I can always leave before the prayer. That's not a big thing. And thank you very much for this. It was just really, really great. And that's all I've got.
Thank you so much, Janice.
Janice.
Grant.
I am Grant, alcoholic from the little Bible Belt up in northern Wisconsin.
Hey, Grant. Hi, Grant.
Yeah, I also refer to it as Mayberry because I spend all my drinking years and first 25 sober years in Chicago, which is a little different from Appleton, which is only 72,000 people, a little bigger than Cottonwood, I guess, but a lot bigger than Jerome, which we were talking about before. God help me if I ever go back to that town. Too damn hot for me. Today we have 90 degree heat, and that's probably the highest we're going to get all summer, I hope. But anyhow, I've really enjoyed both speakers. I'm glad when you have these Sunday afternoon speaker meetings, because then I get to work on my model ship that I'm building. I sit there tinkering with little parts that don't require any concentration, and I could listen to the speakers just like the...
Oh, I think we lost your connection, Grant. If you turn your video off, it might... be better. Well, let's go ahead and let Deborah talk, and we'll come back to Grant if we can get reconnected. Deborah?
Hi, everyone. I'm alcoholic. I'm Deborah.
Hey, hi. Deborah.
Hey, Deborah.
Nice to be here. It's nice to see everybody from Cottonwood. I've been running around here doing my own thing. I'm Suzanne. I love listening to you and Randy. I met Randy. Oh, the very first time I came out to Arizona in February, I think it was 2016. I think that was when I met him. I went, Bob brought me to the Freethinker meeting because I'm an atheist, and I'll tell anybody in AA that'll listen to me that I'm not praying. I'm not doing it. That's it. Leave me alone. And, and so when I went out there, he said to me, I want you to try this meeting. And I said, okay. And I went to it because where I live in Massachusetts, in the entire state, we have like three, we may have four now, but we only have three secular meetings in the entire state. And I'm lucky that three of them are in my state, you know, and I've been, one of them, I helped get started. But, so we went there and I liked it, you know, and so whenever I would go out to Arizona, you know, I had a meeting that I could go to that I wouldn't get crazy at, you know, because if I'm upset, people can tell by looking at me that I'm not happy. That's just the way I am, you know, and, so going out there and, you know, having that meeting to go to and getting to meet everybody and then finding out that, it's going to be on Zoom even when all this is over. I don't come to it as much anymore. You know, I got sober and traditional AA, I got that word in secular AA, and I get a lot out of the meetings. And like I said, you know, like there are meetings that I don't care what people think about me, you know, and I don't talk about the fact in the meetings that I go to most of the time that I'm, that I'm an atheist. I just go and I just do AA. And at the end of the meeting, when they do the Lord's Prayer, I just gather up my stuff and just, unless they, you know, they're saying the Serenity Prayer, then I say, but when they start with the Lord's Prayer, I just gather up my stuff and make my way out. I usually sit in the back of the room anyway, so a lot of people don't see me leave, and I just leave, you know. But at times, you know, like I will raise my hand and I will announce it. Like if I'm at a meeting and it turns into church and I know there are a lot of newcomers there, I will raise my hand and say, I'm an alcoholic. I'm Deborah. I'm almost 30 years sober, and you don't have to believe in God in order to stay sober. All you got to do is not drink and come to AA. Get that down pat, and then you'll do everything else, and you'll be okay if you really want to be sober, you know. And it doesn't go over big sometimes. Like a guy one time at a meeting said he didn't know I was a veteran. He goes, there's no atheists in foxholes. And I went, yes, there are. Yes, there are, you know. And, you know, so stuff like that. And my sponsor believes in God, and she never talks about it to me because she respects me, and she's been my sponsor. You know, I met her when I, when I was like 3 years sober, almost 3 years sober, I met her when I caused a ruckus in a meeting because of something I said, and somebody judged me, and she, you know, came up to me at the meeting. So it was really good to be here today. It was really good to hear two drunkalogs, as we call them up here. And, you know, with the little bit of, you know, like with the secular stuff thrown in. And Suzanne, you know, I've never gotten to meet you in person, you know, but we become friends on Zoom. But when you move to New York, I'm coming to meet you. So I'm looking forward to that. And Randy, I just love Randy. You know, I made a connection with him. The day I really made a connection with Randy was when I was in Arizona one time at the regular meeting, and Bob asked me to speak, or Robert, as you guys call him out there, asked me to speak. And when I got through telling my story, Randy said to Bob, "You got to quit bringing these low bottom drunks to meetings." And I just laughed, you know, and that was the day I got my connection with Randy. So, you know, so it's good to be here. It's good. It was good to hear you too. And thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thanks, Deborah.
Well, thank you, little wallflower.
I don't know. He doesn't look like the guy I know Will I Am, but I guess he is Will I Am. Do you want to share?
Certainly. Thank you, John. Thanks for sharing. Joe, thanks for hosting and everyone's service here. Yeah, I am Will I Am. I'm a grateful garden variety alcoholic. Right now, zooming in from beautiful Kimberly, British Columbia. Spent a lot of time in Cincinnati, and I host a meeting there too. But I really wanted to just say thanks to both Suzanne and Randy. I related to so much of what they said. The thing that really struck me in both shares was about their, you know, the quest, the seeking, you know, the need to seek and grow. And that, yes, there is some poetry in that big book, Randy. You're right about that. But when you're in a meeting and they're locked and loaded on, you know, on certain literature, and they and the outside literature that Suzanne was referring to isn't brought to bear, I think that my experience in those traditional rooms can get pretty stale. I still have a traditional home group in Cincinnati that I visit most Tuesdays. And like Suzanne talked about with respect to her New York group, they were very open and warm-hearted towards me. And I'll always be grateful for that. And I was never shy about announcing my agnosticism. And my first sponsor was very much a believer, and he navigated me very well to the best of his ability. And I'm grateful for that too. But I think for me, being part of my journey has to always be growing. I always have to be evolving my self-development in some way. And I think that that's what secular AA really does for me. Randy, I can really relate to a lot of what you said about your, I still spend my winters in Yuma, and my first couple of times down there were in my own used RV. I'm not sure which meeting you're talking about. I don't know if it's the Expect a Miracles 8 a.m. group, but I do attend meetings in Yuma when I'm there. Although this past year, I didn't because of the pandemic. But I related to that. And I also related to your the import that you talk about at the end with respect to the changing demographics. And I read recently that I think in 2019, between 1980 and 2000, 49% of that demographic of millennials considers themselves non-religious, agnostic, or atheist. And that is just a remarkable statistic if you really, you know, tease that out for another 10 years, let those numbers kind of sit with you for a bit and think about, if that's what millennials are at, what are the Gen Zs at, or whatever they're called, the next ones. But in any event, I started a group for the reasons that was being referred to in Cincinnati, because there wasn't one. And so I think having groups that are neutral in language, where the nomenclature is such that we don't have to do any kind of mental acrobatics, and we can meet people wherever they're at. I mean, if they want to bring the our meeting invites all others too. If they want to bring their resources as to whatever they want to call God, Buddha, I don't, it's not my business. It's got nothing to do with me. I want them to be sober. I want them to do what you just said, which is, you know, take it 24 hours at a time. Don't drink. Surround yourself with people that know more than you and cause you to do well and keep you in the middle of hopefully, for me, a pack of people that just keep exploring, keep growing, keep learning, and keep influencing each other in a very positive way. And I get that from secular AA, and especially in the last year plus through these Zoom meetings. So I'll keep coming back. I hope you all do too. Thanks for letting me share.
All right. Thanks, William. I wanted to mention, by the way, some of you probably are aware that we sponsored the emotional sobriety workshops over the last several months, and we're now done with those workshops, but we're starting a new set of workshops called Varieties of Secular Experience, Navigating AA the Secular Way, something like that. And I posted it in the chat what that's going to be. We're starting on the 27th of June. It'll be the last Sunday of each month. The first one is with a guy named Kevin G, who wrote One Breath at a Time. He's actually a Buddhist teacher and in AA for many, many years. He's a great guy. So I was really pleased to get him to come and visit with us. And that'll be on the 27th at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, and those of you in Europe are just going to have to translate for yourselves. Jeff?
Yeah, I'm Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic.
Jeff.
Thank you, John, for this meeting, and also for Randy and Suzanne for their speaking and sharing great shares that I took to heart very well. I found secular because there was a meeting at a time close to me that because I wanted to go to a meeting, and I went to it, and I didn't really know there were secular meetings at the time. This was probably in 2016, maybe 2017. So I go there, and I was blown away. I took a heart to it right away. And then I discovered there was another one in the same church or in the synagogue at the same time. And they're both, that's just I could walk there from my house. It's like less than a mile. I just really enjoyed it. And I felt at home there. But I do live in the Oakland Berkeley area. And, I go to other meetings. I call them traditional AA, in that none of the meetings I go to say the Lord's Prayer, and the meetings I have been to that said the Lord's Prayer, that was the last time I went there, because there were plenty of meetings to go to in my local area when, you know, and now assume there's even more, but you know, I never experienced some of the things people have experienced, talked about here and talked about other places, other meetings I've been into, where they just say you're crazy, you can't be here, there's nothing as secular, that type of thing. If you don't find God, there's no way you can be sober. I've never experienced any of that. And I feel fortunate in that way in my meetings. That I go to. And this morning I went to a meeting, I call it my traditional home group. And then I have the meeting I talked about before, secular, is my secular home group. They read daily reflections there. And today it was about the sixth step. And it got to be my turn to talk. And I talked about how, first of all, I've said I was agnostic there many a time before. And I said, I don't really like the language they use in the big book, the big book. And I quoted what Jeffrey Mann says in his book, Mann, and talked about that. And I got, you know, afterwards, I got a little good feedback. But, you know, I try to do that. And one thing I find, at least for me, when I go to secular meetings and I say I'm agnostic, I get questions about that from people that are interested afterwards. And I always share information that I can with them and try to help them out. So thank you again for the meeting, and I will pass.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. By the way, I got sober in Southern California about 40 years ago, and I don't call those meetings traditional meetings anymore because we had lots of atheists and agnostics where I got sober. So I call them mainstream meetings because I don't like to think of them as traditional. These are traditional. Oh, look, someone's here from Ireland, Dave.
Thank you so much, John. And thank you, John and Jerry and everyone else who's put the meeting on. Thank you so much, Suzanne and Randy. It was really, really wonderful to listen to you both. I got a lot of identification with both of you and with everybody else. Curiously, here in Ireland, I have never been at a meeting that the Lord's Prayer wasn't read out, bar one meeting where I was the secretary and I didn't read it, and I was almost hung from the nearest tree afterwards. It didn't go down well at all. Any which way. So lovely to hear you, and just the interaction of everyone in the group is so lovely. It's so nice. Like you, Suzanne, I came in my 40s. It's never too late to start getting well, you know. It's the best thing I ever did. But unlike you, I wasn't lucky enough to, in my early recovery, to find secular meetings. I only found it in the past year, in the pandemic. And it has completely opened up my recovery, and I like that so much. I'm waiting for my second vaccine shot. And I'm thinking at some point I'll probably go to some other meetings, but I know of one secular meeting in the whole country here, and it's a bit far away. I don't really want to do that. Anyway, I don't have to. Randy, I would love to read your haikus sometime. I love your way of being. You said something which I'm around. I'll be 15 years in September. And so I've been at quite a few meetings, and I've gone to a lot of meetings over the years, but I've never heard somebody say something which you said, which was when you talked about when you were young, living outrageously to show, to expose the bullshit of what was going on in your family. You know, excuse me if I misheard that and I'm paraphrasing you incorrectly, but that's what I heard, and I identify with that completely. And I heard in the meetings from the very early days, I've heard people talk about drinking because they didn't want to be themselves, and I sort of understood it intellectually, but it wasn't fully apt for me because I drank. I knew who I was, and I drank to be me because I was too afraid to be me in a restrictive society. And I had that. So that thing of, you know, I'll show them. I distinctly remember at 13 years of age, having been beaten at lunchtime, walking back to school and stopping on the way. Back to school and speaking to the sky, but to my mother, saying, if you want a failure, I'll give you an effing failure. And I decided at that point that I was giving up and screw everybody. And I rolled a joint and smoked that on the way back to school. And I don't think I ever did another thing. That's all in the past. My father was made poutine, we call it here, but moonshine. So we had a still in the house. So I know all about that nonsense too. It's so good to have all of you sharing your experience. And I'll take everything I've heard from you guys into my future life, hopefully inside the rooms of AA. And like, you know, like some other people, like Deborah and Janice have said about, you know, maybe starting a new meeting somewhere, but at least going to meetings and speaking up so that newcomers know that they don't have to suffer in silence. Because this is a great program. If I could do the 12 steps, brilliant. Why not? Or why? Doesn't matter. No pressure. Thanks, guys.
Ergo bra. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you. Thank you.
Tune. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly.
Yeah, that's close enough. It's
okay.
It's I'm Tone. I'm an alcoholic. It's a typical Dutch name. It's really difficult for native English speakers to pronounce, I guess. I just wanted to say thank you to you, John, and Joe, and Jerry, and to Susanna Rani for very emotional shares. And yeah, it's been really great listening to all of you. And I'm here from the tiny Netherlands. Think one of the younger guys around here. Really hit home to me the part about finding yourself or running from yourself using substances. I'm so glad I'm finally, I'm almost 3 months sober now. And
All right.
I'm starting to see that this might end up being fun, actually. I bought a lot of secular recovery books. These meetings, also the emotional sobriety workshop for me, helped me to realize that. And I see this stuff with a lot of younger people as well, that the addiction almost seems like the secondary problem, right? Like self-esteem and finding out who you are is the difficult part. And yeah, I'm so glad I found these meetings. I go to a lot of physical meetings here in my home city as well. But these secular meetings help me to cope with all the God in the literature. We don't do the Lord's Prayer and stuff. We do the Serenity Prayer at the end. I leave out the God word. But it's for me, it kind of brought me back to other parts of my life where I was like, I don't belong here in this group of people. And then I thought I finally found my people, and then they were talking about God and stuff, and it kind of put me off. But these Zoom meetings really helped me to put all that in perspective and to appreciate all the love and help there is in the physical meetings as well. And I know there's many people who just, they don't really believe in God either, but they just, run with whatever's going on there. They just like deal with the literature in their own way. And but I did notice that a lot of younger people, it can be a bit off-putting, you know. I think the Netherlands is more agnostic atheist than the US even. So for me, it was really weird to see that the main program for recovery had all this God talk in it, because to me it's personal. If you need God for recovery, you go pray and stuff, but it just feels like it's not essential to recovery for me. And I'm really glad I found you guys and ladies as well. And I'm really glad the way my recovery is going as well. We just started a young people's physical meeting, codependency meeting last week. We had 5 people. It was very emotional. I actually got to sharing sensitive stuff I ran away from for 15 years now, about sexuality and stuff like that, intimacy issues. And I think that's going on for a lot of people, a lot of young people, definitely. Society is like, you're basically, when you're born, you have to start running and you don't get the time and space to stop and think, who the hell am I and what do I want to do? And so that kind of, the shares really, they helped me realize that all of us are going through that. And the to me, the only right way to find yourself is by not running from yourself using alcohol or marijuana or whatever drugs or behaviors. So I just want to say I'm really grateful to be here tonight, and I'm glad I decided to join. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Congratulations on 3 months.
Very glad you were here. Well, I don't see any more hands up. Oh, wait a minute. There we go. Cyril.
Thank you, John. My name is Cyril. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Cyril.
I just wanted to say welcome from the European perspective. It's been a stunningly gorgeous meeting. I've really, really enjoyed every single share, particularly Suzanne and Randy, for what you both said. Time is short. So the two things I will say is what I picked out is you focused on how real the sharing is in secular AA, as opposed to what I call the formulaic shares that you often get in a lot of mainstream meetings. I found secular a good sort of 10 years ago now, but I have been in AA a lot longer than that. And I'm a stoppy sod, and I've always, from day one, expressed my atheism whenever I'm asked to share or do shares in mainstream meetings and so on, you know. And now that I've been introduced to Zoom and listening to people from all around the world, I'm completely horrified at some of the stories that I hear, you know, about meetings end with the Lord's Prayer and people being asked to get down there on their knees to say a step three prayer and everything. I would absolutely hit the roof if I was ever, ever, ever in a meeting like that. So I realise how sort of privileged I am to sort of being brought up, in the London meetings. So yeah, being able to share whatever is on our mind is absolutely critical and one of the gorgeous things that I love about secular AA. Because I've been in AA a fair old number of days now, actually having my fear of having a drink today is not uppermost in my mind. But what, of course, is uppermost in my mind is I'm a recovering alcoholic, and I know my tendency is to overreact to life situations, which all of us, you know, as human beings sort of have to go through. And in all my sort of 36 years in the fellowship, I've just had my most crappy 12 months ever in all of those years, and I've had some big things to cope with. But this last year, with the COVID lockdown, with stuff that happens, family stuff really, I've got an extremely elderly mum who, you know, I don't think it's going to be with us very much longer, sadly. And to see this enormously strong, capable matriarch of our family just diminish before me every day is just incredibly hard to deal with. And I found that very, very, very difficult. And it's something that, you know, we all have to deal with if we have sort of elderly parents. I also have my one and only daughter, who's the other love of my life, has very, very severe bipolar problems, actually. And she's coped particularly badly during the COVID stuff as well. So it really has been very, very difficult because I'm very powerless to assist in many of the things that we should be doing at the moment. So that's a daily sort of struggle for me as well. And again, I mention those two things in particular because going to secular meetings near enough every day now, which I do, has been so important for me to be able to sort of share this stuff for as long as I want, in as much detail as I want. And everybody in secular is just so courteous and patient and sensitive and understanding that allows me to get this stuff off my chest in a way that I never found, to be honest with you, in mainstream meetings. I found it on a one-to-one after the meetings, but not so much sort of in the meetings themselves. So I think that's a really wonderful, liberating thing. And the other thing I picked up from both your shares, by the way, is the use of this term free thinkers. I absolutely, it's my favorite expression. I think it's far more inclusive and modern and sensitive than anything else that we've come up with so far, as it happens. So one of the groups that I started in London is just called London Free Thinkers, because I think it appeals to younger people. It's completely all inclusive, and we can be whoever we want to be, in those meetings. I found, even in years after AA, people still come up to me and say, actually, I don't understand what the term secular means. I don't understand what the word serenity means. We say the serenity prayer 20 billion times, but so many people don't even know what it means. We make lots of assumptions. And I think language is very, very, very important. And AA must modernize. It really, really must. And I'll end with just one little anecdote. My London meeting, I had the privilege of presenting the God Word leaflet, actually, to the fellowship here in the UK. And it's made an enormous difference. And that started off as a really, really, really lonely project for me. I was a GSR. And if I had 2 hours, I'll tell you the story about the struggle that we had to get that adopted. And now it's gone absolutely viral around the world, which is fantastic. And one of my dreams is to modernize all the suite of books and language that AA uses, not to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but to meet some of these demographic issues that people have spoken about, to appeal to young people in particular. We cannot use language which is 100 years old in an increasingly secular society. We just got to do it. But we've got to do it in a respectful and a courteous and an inclusive way, And that's my dream. And the joy of secular, I cannot tell you, being on Zoom meetings like we are now tonight and meeting a whole bunch, 50, 60 faces from 5,000 miles away and having this instant connection is absolutely stunning. And I think this has changed AA forever for the good. And I think it's incumbent upon us now, people who are free thinkers, to sort of try and, make sure that this movement has a constructive future so that we can be in one big tent. And I live for the day when we don't have to talk about mainstream meetings and secular meetings being separate. We can all be in one meeting together. But it's going to take a long time and a lot of thought and a lot of sensitivity and a lot of caring for each other along the way. And anyway, that's my mission in retirement. I'm still an obsessive alcoholic, but I can't tell you how thrilled it was to be on here tonight. I've loved what everybody has shared. And thanks very much and see you soon.
Thanks, Cyril.
Thank you,
Cyril.
Thanks,
Cyril. I can't resist mentioning that free thinkers did start in the 19th century, so yes. We're pretty modern. Anyway, I wanted to thank you all for being here and thank the committee, the International Conference for Secular AA, and Joe and Jerry. Thank you very much. And I'd like to invite all of you to come to our meeting at noon, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, our time, or 5:30 on Tuesdays, our time. And I'll turn it back over to Jerry if you have anything else you wanted to add.
Yes. Thank you, John. Thank you very much, everybody, for all of your sharing. I was so moved by everything. But I would like to turn it back over to Cyril for a moment to talk about the upcoming conference, which is just a couple weeks away. If you could give our little promo there.
Yes, of course, Jerry. I'll try and keep it brief. Yeah, I'm one of the people, I'm the newest member of the ICSA board, actually, because I spoke to Joe about 6 months ago and said, hey, guys, have you got any connections with mainstream Europe or the UK? And surprise, surprise, I found myself now being part of this sort of planning board for this conference that's coming up on the 19th of June. I really urge you, if you at all can, to sort of join the conference. As Joe said at the beginning, it's going to be a 12-hour conference on Saturday the 19th of June, 2 Zoom rooms running simultaneously. So you'll get 24 hours worth of meetings. You could just pop in and out. You don't have to be there all the time, of course. We're recording all the speakers, so they will be all placed on a podcast on the website and everything, so you can look back at them at your leisure. But there's three things I want to pick out, if I may. One is that we've deliberately invited groups who up till now have been very much underrepresented in AA meetings and fellowship. So there's there are sessions on a whole variety of different groups and different subjects. We've also reached out to countries which are having a particularly bad time in Europe. I'll pick out Poland, which is a very Catholic, conservative with a small C country. And it is very, very hard being an atheist, agnostic and free thinker in Poland. I've been over there to see some of the meetings, and we've specifically invited them to bring them into the family of Secular AA as well. So it's very much an educative and a supportive movement. The second thing I want to say about the conference is that, yes, we're reaching out to the wider world to let them know that Secular AA exists. So we've invited all the health professionals, academic counsellors, professors, lecturers, rehab centres, anybody that we can think of. We've invited them all along to observe our sessions, to come to a public information session as well, to let them know that Secular AA is out there. And they don't need to refer their clients to AA only if, as is the case right now, that they feel the clients would accept the God word concept, which most young people will not. And I say that as a retired social worker myself, you know. And last but not least, we've got some really interesting key speakers, including Jeffrey Munn, who's doing who's been mentioned here, who wrote Sober Without God and the Practical 12 Steps. He's doing a 2-hour session for us, actually. So there'll be loads of time for him to explain about the book, the Secular 12 Steps, and also tons of time for questions from the floor. And so it's a very mixed program. You're all very, very welcome. The details are on all the Secular AA websites and WhatsApp groups, or just go into aasecular.org and you'll find the full program. Sorry that took longer than I wanted, but it's an important conference. I do hope you can dip in if you're free. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Cyril. And Joe, of course, put that information in the chat, which I believe you'll automatically get printed out somewhere in your computer at the end of the session. So thank you very much again, Suzanne and Randy. Let's give a silent applause. And thank you, John R., for leading your group and for everything that you do and for all of you very much. So I hope to see you around Zoom land here and, you know, keep coming back. Thanks again.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right. Oh.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Look for the flyer for next first Sunday speaker. I don't have the information.